You cannot understand this fact. Your only activities should be those that can please the Supreme Personality of God. Our education should be such that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the great sage Narada Muni directly insults the king because he was engaged in performing sacrifices that entail the killing of a great number of animals. The king was thinking that he was great for having performed so many sacrifices, but the great sage Narada directly chastises him, informing him that his animal killing only leads to his being puffed up with false prestige. Actually, anything that is done which does not lead to Krishna consciousness is a sinful activity, and any education that does not lead one to understand Krishna is false education. If Krishna consciousness is missing, one is simply engaged in false activities and false educational pursuits. Translation again, if you like to repeat. My dear King, the whole world is covered with the sharp points of Kusha grass. And on the strength of this, you have become proud because you have killed various types of animals in sacrifices. Because of your foolishness, you do not know that devotional service is the only way one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot understand this fact. Your only activities should be those that can please the Personality of Godhead. Our education should be such that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness. Today I want to explore the relation between pride and violence, because we see both of them here in this verse. One key word here is the first one of the third line, stabdho, stabdaha. Which here is translated as proud upstart. We find the same word in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, the divine and demonic nature. And stabdha, or this, there is translated as impudent, which is another form of saying proud. There, this word defines a demoniac quality. Of course, devotees sometimes also struggle with demoniac qualities or anarthas. So, it's relevant for everybody. Even if you personally might be free from this, but it's such a common thing. And then it says, the translation there, Krishna says, self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules or regulations. Which very much aligns with this situation of the king here. He had performed a lot of sacrifices, a lot of blood, or at least the lives of the animals were sacrificed, but Narada Muni thinks that it's not good. It's been a waste of time, a waste of life. It didn't satisfy the Lord. And he has a representative of the Lord is expressing that. So how does it work? Srila Prabhupada says, thinking themselves all in all, and not caring for any authority or scripture. And this is the key. Atma sambhavita, self-complacent. In other words, pride is a form of intoxication that alter our consciousness, and we become self-absorbed. We become so self-centered that our empathy decreases. Our sense of other people's feeling and our other people's sentiments, perceptions, disappears. So it's like when pride goes up, empathy and compassion goes down. And when pride reaches a certain degree and influences the mind to a certain degree, then we become completely callous, indifferent to other people's feelings. This is what is called psychopathic behavior. The psychopath is somebody who can give suffering to others but doesn't feel anything. And these psychopaths, generally when people think of psychopaths, they think of serial killers. And those are, they are part of psychopaths, they are within the, among the general category, within the general category of psychopaths, but they're also very normal and functional people who are actually psychopaths. They just are incapable of empathy. And they made the research in America, and they found that within the CEOs of corporations, there is a higher level, there is a higher percentage of psychopaths than in any other occupation. And they are perfectly functional people. It's just that they can't feel that other people have feelings. And therefore, when we become unaware, we detach ourselves, we disconnect ourselves from the awareness of other people, then we can do anything. Because the self-absorption, again, the word in Sanskrit, in the Bhagavad Gita, atma sambhavitai, the self-complacency, makes us focus only on what is important for us. And anything else, it's just a marginal appendix to life. We all know that there are four principles of religion, independently from any specific religion or denomination. You're talking about cleanliness, socham, tapa, austerity, satyam, truthfulness, and daya, which is mercy. Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam that among, of course, every one of the breaking of the four regulative principles, like eating non-vegetarian food means violent food, or what else is there, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, all of them destroy all of them, but some specifically affect one of them. And mercy is specifically affected by intoxication. One may be thinking, one may be tempted to think, well, maybe meat eating will affect mercy. But actually, it's intoxication that affects mercy. I read for you a little reference. Srila Prabhupada said this is chapter 17 of the first canto. By pride, either artificial or real, the result and action of austerity is spoiled. By too much affection for female association, cleanliness is spoiled. By too much addiction to intoxication, mercy is spoiled. And by too much lying propaganda, truthfulness is spoiled. So how does it work? See, intoxication is an altered state of consciousness, and again, brings self-absorption. We can see in the normal news of the world that people who are like drug addicts, they become completely indifferent to other people's feeling. They can steal money from their relatives, they can steal money from anybody, just because they want the drug, they want that relief. There are cases in which some mothers who are drug addicts, they become so self-absorbed that they neglect completely the children. And the children, they're not fed, they're not meat. Sometimes there are children crying in the room without food or anything, without clothes, and the mother just completely aloof. Intoxication kills mercy. Cannot be merciful. You can't connect with others unless you have some awareness, some consciousness. And because intoxication kind of retracts the consciousness from the outside, then it kills mercy. And pride in the Bhagavatam is very, very often compared to intoxication. Very often you have this expression, intoxicated by pride. You see many times in the Bhagavatam. It's very common. There's one in the 25th chapter of the 10th canto. We see Lord Indra. He says, he talks about the gopas and the gopis, the coward boy, the coward man of Vrindavan, and they say, you see, intoxicated by pride, they're now worshiping Krishna, which is obviously a symptom of the psychological dynamics of Atmavan Manyate Jagat. He was intoxicated by pride. The gopas and the gopis were not proud. They were just loving Krishna. Krishna says, well, let's worship Govardhan instead of Indra. And they say, yeah, it's okay. They were not proud. But Indra, because he's proud, he started seeing, oh, see, they are so intoxicated by pride that they can't see. They can't see beyond themselves, which actually was what was happening to him. He was so intoxicated by pride that he wasn't able to see Krishna as much bigger than him. There is a very beautiful exchange when Krishna, again in the 10th canto, this is chapter 73, when Krishna delivers those kings that they were being kept prisoners by, was it Narakasura, Bhaumasura, Narakasura? Jarasandha, yes. Jarasandha was, I think he wanted to do a sacrifice for Kala Bhairava. He was to do a sacrifice with, I don't know how many, 10,000 kings. He wanted to kidnap 10,000 kings from different kingdoms and kill all of them in the honor of Kala Bhairava. And since 10,000, I don't remember, 1,000, 10,000, a lot. So then, what happened? Probably he didn't get to that quota, so then they were still alive. They were still kept prisoners. And these are kings. They had all opulence before. But they were kept prisoners. So when Krishna freed them, they offered very interesting prayers. And one thing they say to Krishna, previously, blinded by the intoxication of riches, we wanted to conquer this earth. And thus we fought one another to achieve victory, mercilessly harassing our own subjects. They recognized that before they were so proud, they were so self-absorbed, that in their own ambition of being a conqueror and dominate more places, more territory, they fought one another, but the problem is that obviously they were harassing their subjects. They were not just fighting one to one. If you like to fight, go somewhere and fight. Many people do it for fun. They do boxing, they do judo, they do kickboxing. There's a number of fights. People, if you like to fight, go and fight. But these kings were involved in the whole kingdom. All the young men, all these soldiers. So they would say, we have to attack. And then these armies would clash. And they would be killed, they would be wounded, they would come back without an arm, without a leg, without an eye. Some would not come back. You see the difference when Yudhishthir Maharaj won the battle of Kurukshetra, and he was obviously authorized because that fight was wanted and planned and promoted and provoked, promoted by Lord Krishna. But at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhishthir Maharaj laments very much. And one of the things that he laments is that so many people die, now there is no protection for women. These ladies, he speaks a lot about that. So these ladies, they say their sons die. Imagine the type of feelings the mother should feel when the son doesn't come back from the war. Their husbands die. Their fathers die. And he was feeling very much because he's Yudhishthira, he's Dharmaraj. He's not intoxicated. He is always very balanced. He always thinks, is this dharma? What is the consequence? But in this case, he had to fight because Krishna wanted him to fight. But still, he was very, very aware of the pain that people felt. But these kings, apparently, I don't know how much is the humility or how much really is realization, but they say, previously, we're thinking like this. And we harassed everybody just for our own projects. And Krishna, confirms, then he starts speaking, and he gives different historical examples. This is Krishna speaking. Hayaya, Nahusha, Vena, Ravana, Naraka, and many other rules of demigods, men and demons, fell down from their elevated position because of infatuation with material opulence. And this infatuation is also translated in Sanskrit, madat, because of their intoxication. So it's all kind of the same, pride, intoxication. And in the purport, Sridhar Swami, the commentator, is quoted, is explained what these kings have done out of their intoxicated state of pride. Hayaya stole the desire cow of Lord Parashurama's father. There are so many cows in the world. He had to steal the Parashurama's father, Jamadagni's cow. You know, because it's intoxication. It's like driving under the influence. It's a very common in many countries of the world. What they call it, DUI. DUI. Driving under the influence. It's a major crime. You're driving your car and you are intoxicated by alcohol or by something else. So because you have the car, which is a very powerful object, especially when it is speeding, you can kill anybody because your awareness of the road and the people, it's diminished. So all these kings, at the time ourselves, we drive under the influence of pride, of this self-centeredness. And so we do crazy things. Why this Ayaya? I don't know the story, maybe some of you know the Purana or whatever, but why this Ayaya has to steal the cow of Jamadagni? Yeah, but Jamadagni is also a special Brahmana. You have to think, no, you're right. But in fact, what happened? The son, Parashurama, kills him. So he wanted a cow, he lost his life.
It was a common day in
cow. Okay, but still, you know, what kind of karma he satisfied? He died. You know what I'm saying? I know it must be a special cow, but it's not worth it. And Jamadagni killed him and his impudent sons. So it didn't only kill him. You know, Parashurama is kind of broad-minded. No, it doesn't just kill. He kills, you know, when he kills, he kills. So he killed him and his impudent sons. So he lost everything. Then there is this Nahusha. He became puffed up when he temporarily assumed the post of Indra. I think that was when Indra was staying in the stem of the lotus. So for some time Indra was out of station, as they say in India, out of station. And so Nahusha became Indra. But probably he didn't have the qualification, the caliber, and he started doing something very strange. What he did is, out of pride, Nahusha ordered some brahmanas to carry him in a palanquin to an illicit meeting with Lord Indra's chaste wife, Shachi. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. He has all the apsaras of Swargaloka, and you go to go after Indra's wife. On top of that, you can't just go. I mean, there are airplanes and all sorts of conveniences. You have to take brahmanas bringing you on a palanquin. Huh? Okay. Okay, which probably she used it as a trap.
Yes.
Or as a to discourage him, kind of.
She used it
as a trap. And this, I mean, we can take a minute to just as a footnote, that these three things, lust, anger, and greed, they're all connected. Because they're basically all, basically is what is important for me. What gives me pleasure, in this case, carnal pleasure. What disturbs my pleasure, makes me very angry. And what, it's an object that can give me more pleasure, I'll become very greedy about it. And pride is a catalyst of all these three. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, obviously, that these three gates lead to hell. So let's see other kings. Then you have King Vena, of course. King Vena was similarly mad, and then he insulted the Brahmana, they killed him. Then Ravana, out of lust, he kidnapped Mother Sita, and thus her husband Lord Ramachandra killed him. And Naraka was the ruler of the deities who dared to steal Mother Aditi's earrings. Doesn't make any sense. You are the ruler of the diet, yes, and you have to steal Mother Aditi's earrings? I'm going to go to a jeweler, you buy how many earrings you want. And then, what happened? And for this offense, was also killed. So, and this is another aspect. Pride brings violence. And violence brings consequences. More violence. And when I say violence, I mean physical violence and also verbal abuse. Violence is not only if you beat somebody up or if you shoot somebody, that's violence. If you say something very bad, if you insult somebody, that's also a form of violence. That's also a form of abuse. I give you an example. This is obviously not a lecture on women Diksha Gurus. It's on pride and violence. Some of you, or most of you, maybe all of you, are aware that there is some discussion going on in our society. And some devotees promote the idea or support the idea that women, in principle, can become Diksha Gurus, and some devotees don't like that idea. Right now, as we talk, the standing ISKCON law is that women can become Diksha Gurus. In 2005, the GBC passed a resolution saying that a mature, qualified female devotee can take up the service of initiating spiritual master. And the GBC also reconfirmed the same resolution in 2009. But now, as we are talking, there is an official proposal having been already submitted to the GBC for repealing, for revoking this, for this resolution. And devotees have been writing papers, and other devotees have been writing counter papers. And this is, in one sense, it's fine. I mean, we have different opinions. We take different references. We have different priorities. We think and we express ourselves in a civilized fashion. But sometimes these expressions become a little bit too much, or too, what do you call it? Again, violent, abuse, verbal abuse. I give you an example. There's one devotee, I'm not going to mention her name, I think, obviously, but there's one devotee who doesn't like the idea of women Diksha Guru. And when he was made aware that, look, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we have dozens of cases. It's part of our history, it's part of our tradition. Besides those famous examples like Janava Thakurani, Hemlata Thakurani, Sita Thakurani, Gauranga Priya, Gangamata Goswamini, those are like, basically everybody accepts them historically, and that they had a very high spiritual level. So besides them, there are dozens of other ladies who serve as Diksha Gurus in the various Parivaras, means the various Diksha lineage in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, from Advaita Acharya, from Nityananda Prabhu, and so on. So this devotee, he just dismissed all of them. They do not count. I saw the email. It was not an email to me, but I saw the email, all capital. They do not count. Why? Because these are all Sahajiya. Kesh Goswami, Apar Sampradayas. So I thought, I don't know. I don't know these ladies. Some of them, I just know the name, in a list of names. I don't know them. Maybe what he's saying is true. Maybe it's not true. And then I did a little research. I did a little research. And especially, I did a little research on a particular lineage, very relevant to us, because it's the Diksha line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So there you have 12 members. The first one is Janava Devi, who nobody's, what do you call, is not controversial. She is the wife of Nityananda Prabhu. She is considered the younger sister of Srimati Radharani, Ananga Manjari. So she is above suspicion. Then there are 11 more. The 12th is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whom we obviously accept and worship as one of our acharyas. And there are 10 in between. And of these 10, 3 are ladies, 3 are women. So I did a little research, and I found out about this, the history of this Parivara. Some of this information is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, some are in Jaiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, some are different other books. I mean, it's all on the internet. I didn't have to go here and there, just, you know, Google it, basically. Not like a great research. So I found out that this lineage, Janava Devi, the next Janava Devi is Ramachandra Goswami. I never heard about Ramachandra Goswami. And I found that he was the grandson of Vamsivadananda Thakur. Vamsivadananda Thakur was the devotee who was in charge to protect Vishnupriya after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. And he is considered to be, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, he is the flute of Krishna. He is the flute of Krishna in Chaitanya Lila. So they were here in Mayapur, this side of the river. And you know this famous deity, Dameshwar Mahaprabhu in Navadvip, like huge deity? It was here, and it was worshipped by Vishnupriya. Then when Vishnupriya left this world, Vamsivadananda Thakur brought it to Kulia, which is the name of Navadvip, what we call now Navadvip was Kulia. And then he put somebody in charge, and you can still see the deities, many of you, maybe all of you been to Dameshwar Mahaprabhu. And then he went down to Bagnapara, which is another place, maybe 15 kilometers south of the tip of the dam, now Samudragar, 15 kilometers down there is Bagnapara. There, this Ramachandra Goswami was a lifelong celibate. He went to Vrindavan with Janardana Devi. He stayed a lot of time with Janardana Devi. It seems he found Krishna Balaram deities in the Yamuna, came back to Bagnapara, and he did different things. Like Bagnapara actually comes, the name Bagnapara comes because there was a lot of tigers there. And he did a miracle by chanting Hare Krishna, he pacified the tiger, and this tiger started rolling in ecstasy. And so on. So they didn't look really like Sajia or Kesh Goswami. They look pretty good. They look a pretty good personality, pretty advanced, pretty outstanding. And then you continue the story, and you have Vipin Vihari Goswami, who gave the initiation to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Many things, and many people say many things about him. But Srila, one thing they say, for instance, I heard in this, and again, this is another kind of expression, I would say a little bit pride and violence mixed. They say, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur rejected Vipin Vihari. Have you ever heard this? No. Anyway, they say he rejected him. But it's not true. There is no written documentation of any criticism or any rejection of that lineage. It's just not true. And one devotee pointed out that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sometimes he had stenographers, like note takers, to take down whatever he said. And he never, never, never rejected this sampradaya. Never said anything wrong about it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the title Bhaktivinoda was given by this Bagnapara Goswamis. And there, receiving this certificate, which was signed by 13 of them, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I am an eternal servant of the descendants of Ramachandra Goswami. On top of that, with his own handwriting, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur reveals the eternal form of all the 12 members of that parivara. They were all Manjaris. So we can have difference of opinion. But why you should, without knowing them, without knowing any, how can you just dismiss and just say they don't count, they're Apa Sampradaya? Is the example of Nityananda Prabhu kicking Shivananda Sena. You know the story. See, Shivananda Sena was a very rich devotee. And he would take every year he He will take every year all the devotees of Navadvip down to Puri to see Lord Chaitanya. So one day, he was arranging everything, the ferries, the food, the staying, and I don't know how many people will go, I don't know. But imagine a large number. I don't know if in the dozens or in the hundreds, but looks like a large number. And he was paying for everything. So one day, somehow, he couldn't arrange for lunch. And Nityananda Prabhu was very angry. And he just kicked him on the chest. Srila Prabhupada says, in the ecstasy of love, he kicked him in the chest. Very particular ecstasy of love, of course. Our movement is based on love and trust, but you know, we have to be a little careful, love. So, Srila Prabhupada said, this is another book, but anyway, somebody said, once in ecstasy of love, Lord Nityananda kicked Shivananda Seva on the chest. Not only that, but cursed his three sons to die. So, somebody said, well, Nityananda Prabhu did that, so anytime Prashad is late, can kick around and curse around, because this is what Nityananda Prabhu, we had to follow, you know, the acharyas. And this Shivananda Sena was a great personality. You all know the Gaura Ganodesha Deepika, this book that reveals the personalities of Krishna, of the Lord Chaitanya Leela in Krishna Leela. And by the way, it was written by Kavi Karnapura, who was the son of Shivananda Sena. So, Kavi Karnapura said that Shivananda Sena was a combination of two gopis in Vrindavan. I can give the names. The gopis, Veera and Duti. So two gopis in one became Shivananda Sena. So when you kick somebody, just be careful not to kick gopis. Better not to kick anybody. But if really you feel to do some violence, some physical violence or some verbal violence, just let's be careful. There is a Chinese proverb somebody once told me. I mean, it's a Chinese proverb; it's not Shastra, so don't take it too seriously. But the Chinese proverb says, when you feel. Of saying something bad about somebody, think about it 10 times. And if you still feel to say, don't say it. Good advice. Hare Krishna, thank you for your attention. We have a few minutes for questions. Yes, Prabhu? Do we have a mic?
Hare Krishna. What's your advice to overcome pride?
Huh?
What's your advice to overcome pride and violence through pride?
The advice is given by Lord Chaitanya. Trinada pisuni chinata rora pisu ishtana amanina mana dena kirtanya sadahari. See, there is a passive and an active element in that. We could say passive, quote unquote passive, is that one feels himself very low, insignificant, because he thinks of it. It's not, may not become natural, but one thinks, look, There are unlimited universes. In each of these universes, which are also bigger than ours, much bigger than ours, in this any universe, there are unlimited planets. In every planet, there are unlimited places, unlimited people. Where am I? In the picture of reality. So it takes a little bit of contemplation, because obviously, whatever we contemplate, we develop expertise in this field. So we need to do some contemplation, come to that philosophical understanding. Tolerance, it's a practice. Something, things happen like a tree. We know the example, trees are in the sun, are in the rain, people do all sorts of things in them, and they don't do anything, they're tolerant. Then a manina. You don't think of yourself much, or you don't expect many people to glorify you and all sorts of that thing, those things. And then there's the positive thing, manadena. You give actually praise to others. Like sometimes they say, this again is not Shastra, but they say, it's like a little definition. They say, to be humble doesn't mean to think of you less, but it means to think of you, doesn't mean to think of yourself less. It means to think less of yourself. In other words, don't always meditate, me. So to do that manadena means you actually have to recognize that there are people around you, especially devotees, and they have a lot of good qualities, and they do a lot of services, and they benefit you, your life, in many ways, directly, indirectly, and they are very glorious people. But it takes some, coming out of the shell. One who is intoxicated can't think like that. So it takes a little bit the challenge of going out of that, you could say, comfort zone of self-absorption. So, manadena, you see, you do something for others, no? So you do some service, you do some... So that brings us to a state of mental health. And then associating with the great personalities through the books and all that. Because you see how great they are. There's a very interesting verse in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam. Because it's interesting, because even somebody who is very educated can become very proud. So it says, stabdha, same word here, stabdha. Although the six qualities of education, austerity, wealth, beauty, youth, and heritage are for the highly elevated, one who is proud of possessing them becomes blind. And thus he loses his good sense and cannot appreciate the glories of great personalities. Okay. Maybe we have more time for one more question, if anybody likes. Hare Krishna. Can I get the mic here, please?
Greetings from Sri Sri Radha Madhavari Dham, Phoenix, Arizona, and Sri Chaitanya Cultural Center, Tucson, Arizona, USA. Question is that in ISKCON, even during Sri Prabhupada's time, there were discussions, there were differences of opinion as to who should manage the temple, grihasthas or brahmacharis. So Sri Prabhupada.
Or sannyasis.
Or sannyasi. So Sri
Prabhupada.
Thank you for correction. So Srila Prabhupada always found adjustments, always. So why cannot we follow the same thing now? Why cannot we have tolerance? Why cannot we have adjustments and still...
Adjustments of what, sorry?
Adjustment amongst ourselves.
We adjust all the time. We are. We can improve, but we are adjusting.
So what should be done for...
I mean, this is our living together, especially in a voluntary association. You got to adjust. So what do you see that we could do better? How we can adjust more? What would be your advice?
Thank you.
Now, what would be your advice? How can we adjust more?
My advice is, again, as you said, that trinapi shunichena.
Okay.
Be humble.
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, we are adjusting. Of course, we could do more. See, having different opinions is not bad, because we are persons, there will always be some opinions. There will always be, like, what we could say, conservatives and progressives. what we, you know, the left and the right, there will always be. In 10,000 years, there will always be. Because of different backgrounds, because of different gunas, because of different emphases. We should understand that difference of emphasis is not a difference of opinion. Somebody is dedicating his life to take care of the cow, it's great. Somebody is dedicating their life to distribute books, it's great. Somebody is dedicating his life to serve the deities, it's great. Somebody is dedicating his life to serve in the Gurukul, to teach children, it's great. So they're not different sampradaya. Goshala Parivara, also. It's great. So, different levels of emphasis or personal priority doesn't mean we differ. Doesn't mean, you know, somebody's preaching in Africa, it's great. Somebody's preaching in South America, it's great also. So, these things, it obviously boils down generally the three gunas. We can have differences in sattva guna, unity in diversity. We see the oneness, we see the common thread, we appreciate the diversity, but we keep unity in standards and in focus and in goal. Then there is a perception of passion, which is one sees the different things as different, as ontologically different, and so becomes confusion, becomes a lot of conflict. And then there is ignorance. And ignorance means fanaticism. Sri Krishna says the knowledge in ignorance. Kritsnavat. One thing is everything. So the book distributor in ignorance, not all book distributors, but the book distributor in ignorance, he criticized the deity worshipper in ignorance. The cow protector in ignorance, he started criticizing the translator. But that's ignorance. So the point is that we need to raise ourselves to the platform of unity in diversity, the platform of sattva guna. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
One quick follow-up. Why there are so many lawsuits?
I have to follow the authority.